Namaste, good morning. Today I would like to take up two emails received and a brief sharing on the subject of fear. And then after that we can share whatever you would like to share or ask questions. This is a question on free will, which has been addressed adequately, but a very important point is raised here, which I'd like to discuss with you all. Is free will an absolute illusion, or is there free will? Some people have quoted Ramana Maharshi saying, "Everything is destined," but there's also a record where he has said, "What is destined to happen will happen, try as you may to stop it." Does the phrase "do what you may to stop it" show some amount of free will? Or is that also destined? As Bhagwan has said, what is meant to happen will happen, try as you may to stop it, and what is not meant to happen will not happen, try as you may to make it happen. And therefore, the best course is to remain silent. Now, the point which is raised here, which is a crucial aspect to understand, is connected with doership. Does the phrase "do what you may to stop it" show some amount of free will? You see, what is being pointed at here is when we try to force our will upon a situation which is not yielding. So what Bhagwan is saying is that that can create suffering. It is implied in the statement. We invariably find that we are pushing against circumstances and things to get a particular outcome. But the man of understanding rests in the knowing that to push beyond a point is to exercise extreme doership in a situation which can bring about a lot of suffering because the outcome may not be what I had wanted it to be. And then people say, "Oh, if I had not pushed my way through this particular situation, I would not have got the result I got." And then the ego comes in through the back door. Because of my effort, because of my pushing my way through that particular circumstance, I got what I wanted. Where did that effort come from? Even that has come from the source. And then we lecture other people, "Oh, you must push, you must fight, you must do this, you must do that, then you will get what you want to get." It is not true. The same person who has had success in a particular situation may not have it in another. Because the forces of the universe have to come together to deliver an outcome. That is what Bhagwan is pointing at. Whatever is meant to happen will happen, try as you may to stop it. There are forces far beyond your control. But the ego thinks the free will is the be-all and end-all of everything. Your own birth was not in your control. The earth you are standing on is spinning at a particular rate, not in your control. You depend on oxygen, its availability is not in your control. You are gifted with the five senses. What you see, hear, taste, smell, touch, not in your control. And on the basis of what you see, hear, taste, smell, and touch, you perform an action, not in your control. So we have to be very careful with pushing our way through situations, people, pushing our point of view down people's throats. So they may agree with what we are saying. The man of understanding knows that free will is a mechanism of functioning in duality. Decisions have to be made. No doubt about it. But knowing that the results are not in my control, what is the real value of that free will? Secondly, knowing that my free will is based on two factors: my genetics, the way I am made, and the conditioning I have received from day one, which has shaped me. The way my parents were, their thought processes, the school I went to, the religion I was born into. This is the foundation of my thinking and decision making. And none of this was in my control. So while free will is recognized as the mechanism of functioning, it is actually exposed that it is not as grand and glorious as it is made out to be. And then one finds in life, one gets more and more aligned with the will of the Supreme, the will of the Divine, the will of the Source. This battle to exert my free will now no longer is a battle. So an ego which is entrenched and has its heels dug into the concept of free will not like to hear this. But it is everyone's experience. Deep down, the ego knows that it has dug its heels into quicksand. And then with the understanding, free will becomes a very beautiful mechanism. It becomes lighter without this load, mother load of the me and my story and my burden and my free will. It is seen for what it is, a part of the functioning of totality. And then one goes with the flow in life. I had read something similar last Sunday, and this is another question on the same lines, but we will focus on a different aspect of it. Once again, it is about someone. It's a family of sisters, and the mother who has been ailing for a very long time. Various ailments accumulated over the years, passed on recently. And this sister, this girl, has been following the teachings, and here's what she has to ask. She's the youngest of the siblings whose mother passed away. My problem is my behavior. I am the youngest in the house, and my connection with my mom is very different. I used to think that if something happens to my parents, I will be totally broken. But nothing of the sort is happening. In fact, I prayed to God to take her away because of her suffering. She had suffered enough, and I was crying. I cried, but I am not feeling anything like, for example, how will I live? What will happen of me? I cry when a memory comes up, and I laugh remembering some incidents with her. I felt guilty that I could not do anything being so far away. But what could I have done? The situation was not in my control. I do not know if this behavior of mine is normal or not, because my outburst is not happening. I pray that my mom gets liberation. She was a very simple person. Whoever calls me, I tell them what has happened, what can we do about it, and so on. It definitely feels like a formality. I am truly surprised that I am behaving so normally. My wish that my mom passes away, is it proof that I am not a good daughter? Am I selfish that I don't think of others? I am less sad and caught up in self-analysis. Is this level of acceptance truly an acceptance in me? Please let me know if my behavior is abnormal. Is it to wish for someone who has experienced severe limitations of the body for years? What greater wish than to wish that person be freed of such illnesses and limitations that lead to one suffering and being in bed for years and years? Is that being selfish? To be stuck to this existence, which is in any case limited and transient, short-lived. Where is the glory in wishing someone to suffer the living dream of life when they are so unwell? But society says a different thing. You are not a good girl. That is the pressure this girl is feeling. To be a certain way. And she has so beautifully said, I have even cried, but no outburst is happening. A man or woman of understanding, it does not mean that tears won't arise, grief won't arise. I keep mentioning this point again and again. It is not necessary that it has to arise. But even if it does arise, there is no involvement in that grief and in the tears and a big story created out of that. Why did God make her unwell? Why did God do this to my family? Why am I this? Why is my sister that? When words like why and should, this should have been that way, this should be this way. When these kind of words start evaporating from one's vocabulary, one knows one is resting in what is and the acceptance of what is. The acceptance of what is happening in the moment. Here, the youngest child seems to have the deepest understanding. And yet, because society projects differently, she is confused. Because she is not immersed in mourning in the duration of time. So there's nothing abnormal about this. It's the most beautiful, it's the purest form of grieving without being lost in the story of grieving, the loss of a loved one. Laughter arises, as she says, when memories come up, tears arise. That is the natural flow of life. But to want someone to be in the body because you don't know what will happen to you without that person. That is how the ego operates. Which is being more selfish? It's like someone years ago very proudly told me there was a man who was passing away, and so his friends gathered around him for the last few moments. And so he said, oh, you know what I did? I held his hand in my hand and I kept mentioning his name and saying, we are all here, we are all here, don't worry, don't worry. And he held my hand and, you know, I said, we are with you, we are with you. And he held my hand and this went on for a good 5 minutes. He held my hand. And I said, to be very honest, the opposite should have happened. You should have left him, let him be, let the consciousness is already leaving the body in the last moments, and to keep pulling it back, bringing it back to body consciousness. Are you doing it for the other or for yourself? He held my hand, he held my hand. This is what is referred to as hypnosis. The important me. In another mail, someone said, are all the big things in life destined? Marriage, profession, death, etc. And in fact, someone asked Bhagwan the opposite. I can understand that all the big things are destined, but are even the small insignificant things destined? And he said, yes, right from the time of birth, whatever the body has to go through is destined. Now the ego does not like to hear that. Oh God, what about my will? We are back to the subject of free will. And this is not to make one complacent and fatalistic in life. This is to show that destiny and free will are the polaric opposites of the same pole. We are functioning in duality. Life shows us what is destined is what is in this moment. It is not like this concept of something which is written in stone and we are doomed to our fate. You see, that's how the ego takes this whole concept of destiny. Why? Because my will is being threatened. Now you are saying that God has etched my destiny on the slab. Whereas the masters are trying to show us that destiny and free will are the polaric opposites in duality. And those who come onto the spiritual path because of suffering they have experienced at some point in their life, they are already open to this idea that things happened to me. There was loss. There was loss of a parent. There was loss of a job, maybe, of an object. And I suffered. That is the start of the spiritual journey. There's this beautiful story on destiny. There was a tortoise. And his friend was the great bird Garuda, the vehicle of Lord Vishnu. And one day, he told his friend Garuda, the tortoise, that I'm quite shaken up. And Garuda said, "What happened? You're white. You're looking white, my friend." He said, "Yes." He said, "I saw the Lord of Death in front of me. And you know what, Garuda? He was laughing. He was laughing on my face." Garuda got very upset. He said, "How dare he laugh at my friend? I will teach him a lesson." So he picked up the tortoise and flew thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away from that spot, till he could go no further. He went to the farthest corners of the earth. And then he came down on the ground, put his friend, the tortoise, down and said, "Here you will be safe. Go and have some water. I'll take some rest." And when Garuda opened his eyes, his friend, the tortoise, was dead. And Garuda saw the Lord of Death there. And he started laughing, the Lord of Death. And Garuda said, "How dare you? You were laughing at my friend. And that is why I flew all this way. And now again you're laughing at the death of my friend." He said, no, you have misunderstood me, Garuda. You have misunderstood me. I was not laughing at the tortoise, your friend. I was laughing at the Lord, the Almighty. Because when he told me this tortoise's time has come, in so-and-so place, I thought God has goofed up because we are thousands of miles away from that place." And he said, I was laughing. I said, "Now the Lord Almighty has made a blunder. And I was wondering, how is this going to happen? I could never have imagined that you, the mighty bird, would bring the tortoise to this location, because this is where it was written would be the end of his life. That is why I was laughing, not at your friend. Please forgive me." We are meant to be where we are meant to be, or not. And this brings a relaxation. Whatever stage in life one is at, in the job, with family, there's a higher power, there's a higher force. And if we allow that to operate, you find that you are in alignment with that force. Lastly, I would like to share one small story, actual situation, and how this teaching truly brings this light of understanding, truly brings peace of mind. It is about a brother and sister, and what is sometimes very typical in Indian parental conditioning, the brother, the son that is, was given a kind of free hand to party late into the night and so on and so forth. And the parents were overprotective of the daughter. Very fearful. Monitoring her every step, when she would go out at night, when she would come back, whom she would meet. So the daughter turned out to be a fearful daughter. She was full of fear. And then the parents tell the daughter, don't be afraid. Why are you so much full of fear? The ones who have injected the fearful conditioning into the daughter then ended up telling the daughter to be like the brother who was not having fear. You see, this is how conditioning works. We put our fears into children, into friends, into people. We just keep projecting our fears. And then when someone becomes fearful, especially in the parent-child relationship, then the child is made to feel that being fearful is wrong. How can you be so fearful? How can you not operate normally in life? Be like your brother. He's so outgoing. He's so forward-looking. He's so positive. Comparing and judging happens. Why? Because there's this one-size-fits-all approach. How is it possible? People are different. There are some people who are timid and some people who are strong. The way they have been shaped by their genetics, by their nature, by their conditioning. And that is why I often say, if one has fear, accept it. Rather than fight this fear, I should not have fear. What is wrong with me? Nothing is wrong with you. Don't be afraid to be afraid. Accept it. Look at it. Witness it. Embrace it. And then the strangest thing happened, which doesn't seem so strange. Thankfully, the daughter came out of it. How? By all that I said. When fear arises, it arises. And it is witnessed. But the son, unfortunately, when he started his business, a new business, had a very big setback. And it was a failure. And this son, who was so positive, the apple of everyone's eye, so, you know, brave and this and that, could not handle it. He was afraid to meet his friends, because he was afraid of being judged. Totally not interested in the spiritual journey because it was not destined. It was not the right time, whatever reason it is. Looked down upon it, looked down upon people and classified them as weak because their peers were going to one very big ashram in the south of India and they would laugh at them. Oh, you can't stand up for yourself. You need a crutch. The same son. So this teaching is an invitation to look at all aspects of your personality and understand them. Knowing that all your so-called imperfections are perfectly placed by God. And that is love. And it becomes such a beautiful journey when you look at fear. Because then the ego is laid bare. What is this fear? It is the fear of survival. Survival of what? Of me? Of my body? No, me. Me and my story, me and my identifications, and so on and so forth. It becomes a journey of discovery. That is called being courageous. It does not mean that there's no fear, therefore I am courageous. That's a shallow fear. To look at your fear, walk with it, make friends with it. Both the brave son and the fearful daughter in deep sleep. Where's the fear and where's the bravery? You see? All right. If anyone would like to ask questions now, you're welcome to.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, very nice to meet you. This is my first time meeting you. And thank you for sharing your teaching and very appreciate your compassion. And
can I know your name? I need to pronounce your name.
Yes. My name is Lifen. And Lifen. I need to start my video. Okay. Let's try it. Because I just took a shower. I didn't prepare to share video, but it's okay. Anyway.
Which part of the world?
I'm sorry. I'm in LA right now. I'm in LA. I live in LA.
Norway.
Yes. Norway. LA, Los Angeles. Los Angeles.
LA. Sorry. Okay. It's lively.
Yeah. Actually, I just saw your YouTube video, I think, an hour ago. So I didn't know you an hour ago.
Okay.
Before, like an hour ago. So that's very interesting. Uh-huh. Anyway, my question is, what is the definition of free will in this teaching? And based on that definition, do you mean that free will does not actually exist at all?
Well, life, in absolute sense, we just covered that because, as I said, free will is a mechanism of functioning in daily living. If you decide you have to step out of your house, you have to take that decision. You see? So you are exercising your free will as a mechanism of functioning in daily living. But when you look at that free will, you will realize that it depended on something. Maybe Lifen felt he had to buy some groceries, the thought came, and therefore he had to step out. So that free will is not a standalone free will. It depends on so many factors which are beyond Lifen's control that Lifen realizes that while I have to act in life and exercise my so-called free will, what might happen is my groceries may not be available when I step out and visit the store. The store might be closed. Anything could happen. You see? So the value of that free will is seen in its true light. That is what happens. So one cannot say that there is no free will because you are functioning in duality. And so free will, as my teacher would say, you have to act as if you have free will, knowing that whatever happens is God's will. All right?
Okay, okay. Yes, so what you're talking is, let's say, all of a sudden there's a thought coming that maybe tomorrow I should go to supermarket. Mm-hmm. And then another thought react to that thought, which says, that's a good idea. Let's do it. So both of the two thoughts, it's out of, like, nobody controlled that two thoughts.
Right.
So even the action following the two thoughts, it's just automatic. So there's no thinker in a series of thoughts and actions. So So there's no real free will then.
You could say that, but the point is, knowing this, how will Lifen function in life? He will function with far more ease, far more acceptance, far more lightness, because that precious free will, which he had placed so much of importance on, he realizes can take him only that much far, you see? So that is what lightens load, and he really starts living life now knowing that the outcome is not in my control, you see? That is the beauty of it.
Okay, got it. So, okay, now I understand now. So there is total, like I can, this, like in the absolute sense, there's nobody to let go of anything, but right now it's just like releasing everything as it is. So what happens, happens. That's what you mean, right?
That's most beautifully expressed by you, exactly. Whatever happens, happens. What happens when we are too immersed in free will is we take the happening that happens so personally and we create such a drama and story around it that we create suffering for ourselves. But the man of understanding or the woman of understanding sees the happening as a happening in life.
So if
Lifen wanted to go and buy a beer at the local store below, and the thought came that I feel like having a beer, and he goes down and there's no beer, he accepts that the thought came to have a beer. I wanted to have it, but it wasn't God's will because there was no beer in the store. But Lifen could also say, oh, bloody hell, why is the store without beer? I'm going to talk to the store manager. I'm going to fire him. I wanted that beer and that beer is not available. What kind of a store is this? I'm going to post a review on Google that this store is not well stocked. And then this whole suffering is created, you see?
Now I see. The outcome, okay.
Because the outcome was different from what Lifen imagined, Lifen is very upset because he didn't get his beer. Whereas in the other instance, Lifen saw that one thing led to another. And in this case, it was that the thirst for beer was not fulfilled. And that's it. There was no involvement in that story.
Wow.
You see?
But phenomenons keep happening in a sense. So samsaras keeps rolling. But there's nobody experiencing, like there's no experiencer. Like even in the ultimate sense, then even phenomenon needs an observer. But if there's no observer, actually there's not even a phenomenon going on. But we will say there is a phenomenon going on. Can we say that?
You can certainly say that. But that is why even the Buddha said samsara is dukkha and nirvana is shanti. The world is full of suffering. Samsara is dukkha and nirvana is peace. Peace. So Lifen is at peace when his beer is not available. Whereas Lifen would have suffered because he placed such importance on free will and outcomes that he created suffering for everyone. You see? So it is the attitude to life. It is Lifen's attitude to life which determines whether Lifen will be at peace or not. Because Lifen cannot control the flow of life, sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. But Lifen can look at his attitude to life. What happens to pleasure? What happens to pain? How much he gets swayed by it? How much he gets involved in it? But when he accepts that life cannot be only pleasure, 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 because the nature of duality is pleasure and pain. He accepts pain when it comes. He accepts pleasure when it comes, knowing that pleasures won't last forever. He enjoys them while he can. And when pain is there, he does not create more suffering by getting involved in the pain and saying, it is my pain. And why did God do this to me? What have I done wrong? Etc., etc., etc. So Lifan is no longer invested in the drama of life as he was earlier.
Wow. That's really relaxed. And then things just happens. Like if I'm very passionate about, let's say, spirituality, it will happen. If I'm passionate about whatever it is, it will just happens. Yeah. Or if I just want to. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Now I understand.
Okay, life.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Thank you, Gautam. Thank you.
Yes, Abhishek.
Good morning, Gautam.
Morning.
I hope things are good because I heard last week in Bombay there was a cyclone. And...
Yeah, it was quite intense, but a lot of trees were lost, but touch wood, I think lives and electricity and all was quite okay.
Okay, good to hear that. So I would just like to share an instance, which is, I think, in relation to your second mail, which you read out, and how the acceptance of things should be there, like, It's good that we accept things because see, what happens is my father is going through cancer. My father is going through cancer.
Okay.
So it's the cancer has enlarged and it's the second time. So it has come after 5.5 years. So now the thing is, it has come, I know. And our free will was to just go for the treatment,
yes,
like radio and chemo. And we did our best. And so now I think what I'm like, I have accepted. See, we did not, and nobody intentionally created cancer, right? So it has occurred to him. Nobody intentionally did that. So that's why I think it's a very relaxing thing to accept that it has come. But our free will is just to go through the treatment and rest leaves everything up to the God. Because yeah, we can't do anything much, right? The problem is when we say that why it has come, so we create a psychological suffering.
Yes.
Which is far more than the suffering of the body.
Yes.
Because then everything occurs from thought. It's thought, word, and action. Thought, feeling, words, and action. And if our thoughts is entangled in the ego, in future or past, why did this come and all these things, then we are creating psychological suffering. So what I want to share is like, I have accepted, I don't know about the pain. I have accepted that it had to come, that's why it has come. And what best do is go for the treatment, and we are doing it. Rest, if it will get cured, it will get cured definitely, right? So we are doing our best to go for the treatment. That's it. We can't do anything much beyond that.
That's it. You said it. And, yes. It's so, Abhishek, it actually is so, what should I say? It's the beauty and magnificence of what happens in same situations to different people. It's just astonishing. Because I was informed of someone who was diagnosed with stage 2 cancer 10 years ago, still around, and it comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. And they've been around for 10 years. So you see, what is meant to happen will happen. And as you so rightly said, the first step is the acceptance of what has happened, because that is where the ego usually fails. It puts up this thing that this should not have happened, you see. It happens to others. It should not have happened to me. That is what starts the suffering. So when you accept that, you lay down your weapons, so to speak, as Joel Goldsmith would say. You're not opposing what is. You are accepting what is and then doing what is in your best of abilities to do. In this case, after all, he's your father.
Exactly.
Do exactly what you think it would take to get him out of the situation.
Exactly. We are doing that. So when we say that, when we don't accept it, then we are actually resisting what has already happened.
Exactly.
So that is not in our control. We are keep on juggling on that, and we are actually ruining our present journey also, what I believe.
Yeah, because you have, just like your father, Abhishek, and me, we have a fixed number of breaths to breathe.
Exactly.
The point is, are those going to be breaths we breathe in awareness or lost in this whole drama and story?
Exactly. See, Gautam, the sadness in a moment might be there, but that does not convert into, you know, grief or anxiety.
So even if it converts to grief or anxiety, even if it does, that is not judged and that is witnessed.
Exactly.
What happens is that the ego starts getting involved in all these labels and words. And that is what does not happen when the understanding sinks in. So exactly. Let's say by nature, let's say Abhishek has a sibling who gets anxious and Abhishek does not. You see, that may happen. But when that acceptance, that initial acceptance is already there, that this is what it is right now, here and now in this moment, even that anxiety's grip goes.
Exactly.
Sadness will arise. I mean, you know, if you know that the days of a loved one are numbered,
exactly,
sadness is bound to arise. But that me and my sadness and poor me and my story, all that does not happen.
But one thing I have realized that too also, if we say the number of days, still it's not in our control. If it is meant to live for another 10, 20 years, they will definitely.
Correct.
So in relation to what Bhagwan said, that the best course is to remain silent. That means to be without ego, right?
Yes, well said. Without doership.
To be in the present.
Yeah, he referred, be silent means silence of the thinking mind.
Exactly.
Not going into the imaginary future, not going into the dead past.
Exactly. If the same patient is in the deep sleep, then the cancer is still there, but he does not get any thought, right?
Because it is of the body.
Exactly. So that is what, you know, I think the best part is to accept what is. And then to take the, as you said, that in the life of duality, you have to take decisions. And as for the free will, and that we did, we went for the radio and chemo, and that what we could do best. We go to the doctor for follow-up as well. We don't say that, oh, we don't do anything. Like, it's again the doership, right? So yeah. Things are happening and we are following what we can do best. But deep down, I have realized that it's not something I'm doing. It's being done.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you something which is even worse. I have seen cases where then the person who has cancer is blamed for having the cancer. Oh, your thought processes led to this, you know, all this. And I mean, I have mentioned this in a talk years ago. I was at a seminar of my spiritual teacher when he was alive, and I met a doctor from Australia. And he was telling me, he was immersed in Nisargadatta Maharaj's teachings and Ramesh Balsekar's teachings. He was telling me of his patient, a young man who had cancer. And the doctors pretty much said, there's no hope. So he went to, in this town in Australia, there was a whole seminar on positive thinking and all that. And so they told him that, you know, you enroll in our program and we will show you, because we'll cure you of this, because we'll show you how your thinking processes are wrong. And if we reprogram your mind and we do this and do that, it will sort out. And he was getting progressively worse. And then when he was on his deathbed, this is what now the doctor told me, the patient, he was looking so distraught. And he told the doctor, he said that, you know, I would have rather died of cancer. They made me feel so guilty that I didn't give my all to the cause and therefore I became worse. You see, the guilt that you didn't put in your best effort to get cured by following what we teach you in the cause, he was dying of that guilt. Now the poor fellow didn't have that guilt in the first place. But that is what happens. You see, we do not allow things to just be, and for the higher force, consciousness, the source, to play its role.
Exactly. We did not receive this, like, I did not get this body on my own will, right?
Yes.
It happened. So, So yeah, I think all the questions go in the deep sleep, of course, because there is no me.
Yes.
And the best course to stop this me is to accept what is.
Yes. And thank you. Always in deep sleep.
Thank you. Thank you, Kav.
All the best to your dad. All the best. Yes, Priyam.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, sir. When you were sharing an email today from the girl who lost her mother, then a question arose, like she was concerned about her mother attaining liberation. So from the perspective of being pure consciousness, isn't it like who is really there to attain liberation? Because if we rest as just awareness, then there is no separate like body mind to really attain something, because it already is what it is, and it already is just simply awareness. So from that perspective, who is there to seek liberation or get reincarnated in a different body mind? Is there someone, or is it like, yeah, that question arose when she was so concerned about her mother attaining liberation.
Yes, and what you said is absolutely right, because that is called being liberated while living. Liberated from what? From all our concepts, our judgments, our thoughts, our condemnations, all what if scenarios, what should be scenarios. When none of that is there, we are liberated.
Yeah.
It is the individual me with its sense of doership that is in bondage. When the sense of doership is uprooted from the ego, that is liberation.
Okay, thank
when
you.
When we no longer reincarnate our patterns, we no longer get involved in these cartwheels of the thinking mind like we used to, pointing fingers at others or ourselves and getting lost in the drama and stories of what happens to us. We are liberated from all that, and we are living a life of peace, harmony, and calm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Holger. Are you there, Holger?
Yes, hello, Gautam.
Yes, my dependable Holger.
I just wanted to say how beautiful it is to hear beings speak the language of non-duality.
Yes.
Just amazing. I mean, just gratitude.
I agree with you. It's so freeing. It's so freeing.
And just in regard to treatment, how this girl was not fulfilling the expectations of society and wandering. So isn't also treatment just on one level, just like a candy for the separate self, which cannot be still?
Yes, so true. But more so, you know, in specific cultures like the Indian culture, there's a lot of pressure on how people should be. And we get lost in that because, you know, it's like you're constantly wearing masks because you have to be a certain way. And a lot of people suffer this, Holger, because they are not able to put down that mask. The mask is worn constantly, and one mask is worn with friends, one with family, one with business associates. And there's very little rest. And in this teaching of non-duality, it is literally a peeling away of these masks for the light of being, which we have covered up with all this stuff, you know, for just the light of being to shine through.
Daddy.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think you're being nothing. I have nothing on my mind. It's just gratitude.
Okay, Olga. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Would anyone else like to ask anything? I don't know if some of you are aware or not, but we have a silent meditation on Thursday evenings, which is India time, 7 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. And we had one last Thursday, and we are having one this coming Thursday. I sometimes speak at the beginning of the silent meditation, and I may speak during it. It just depends on what arises spontaneously. And it's a beautiful way to share this space with you all in silence. And you all are all welcome to be part of it if you are so inclined to. All right. Yes, Kajal. Are you there?
How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask Gautamji, I love to hear your this. I enjoy podcast Nick and yours. I just love it, everything. And I'm so thankful to you. So many doubts have been cleared. I just wanted to ask one thing. I love Sai Baba. You know, I'm a devotee of Baba. And when you say that nothing is in our control, everything is in Baba's hand, then why Baba says in Sai Sacharita that leave Chaturtha, leave your cunningness, just say Sai Sai. And everything is in Baba's hand. Then why do everybody say that be on your right path, do right karmas? When everything is in Baba's hand, then why I am, cursed, or people say, like my husband or anybody, that you have done this, you have done this. When nothing is in my hand, everything is in Baba's hand, then why I am, you're understanding what I'm saying, right?
Yes.
So I don't understand. So I love Baba Sai Chaitanya. I keep reading it. I enjoy yours and Nick's everything. Eyes, that thing I've learned. I enjoy my evenings are always with you. Maybe you are not aware. I really, and you know, my daughter, she's in UK. I always tell her, Gautam Sachdeva, I just love him. Just listen to him. Whatever doubts, he will clear your doubt. But when you say everything is Baba's, you are not doer, everything, then why do we have to, remind ourselves, please be on good path, Kajal. Don't say, I wanted to share a small incident. Yesterday, I was listening to you that hum jo sochte, secrets of this thing, you and Nick. So one of my neighbors, she came and she started saying, Kajal, this is our terrace and we can do whatever we want. And she was giving her dog. I said, Baba kehte hain, don't shout anybody. I said, okay. But then this leaving my personality. I don't understand. Thank you so much, Gautam, for everything. Baba bless you. I'm so grateful. I just love your talks.
Thank you. You see, Kajal, your point is actually a point of surrender. It's, you see, all you can think of is you and your journey. What the others say is a completely different matter. And if you have surrendered your thoughts, feelings, emotions, words to, in your case, Sai Baba, if for others, it could be their master or God, consciousness, the source.
Yeah, yeah.
If that is surrendered, that is the most beautiful way of living. So for example, even if, like you could say, shouting arises.
Yeah.
Let's say something is triggered, something else could have happened in the day and one blows one's fuse.
Yeah.
That is also surrendered. The problem is we get involved in that reaction and we create a whole story out of it. I should not have, if I am on the spiritual path, how could I have shouted? I should not have done this. I should not have done that. And then this involvement, this drama becomes the real suffering. Whereas you say, my God, in spite of all that I understand and I follow, this happened. It was meant to happen. I may have hurt someone and therefore I may apologize to that person whom I hurt. But when you see life as a series of happenings, you're not going back into that and getting involved into that story. But others would love for you to get involved in it, you see.
Then what am I supposed to do? Because I just want to follow your teachings and Baba's. I really want to be a good cousin.
You are concerned with your peace of mind.
So should I allow whatever is happening? I will take it Baba's will.
Whatever gives you peace. Whatever gives you peace.
Okay. And one more thing. You always say we are not doer. We all are instrument. Like Ramesh ji also said. But then so many bad things happening around. That is also Baba's wish.
Because you are thinking in terms of Baba as someone good, not as the source of everything, of duality of every conceivable kind. Left and right, front and back, up and down, pleasure and pain. But we label things, you see, and we want only pleasure and no pain. But God is the source. If Sai Baba is the absolute is all pervasive, all knowing. You see, so, and in fact, I would like to touch upon this topic in my next talk, which is to do with prayer and asking God for things, thinking that he does not know, you see.
Yeah, I would like to cover this
especially in light of Joel Goldsmith's teachings. And so we'll end on that note. But the point is that if we truly surrender to consciousness, the source, the master, call it what you will, that every thought, emotion, and feeling that arises in this body arises because of the way it has been designed and shaped by conditioning. We are offering that to the divine. We are not taking ownership and possession of that. So that's what happens.
So should, if I'm asking something to Baba, then Baba, please give me, he's listening to us. So should I be asking again and again, or Baba knows?
According to me, if someone like Baba has to be asked again and again, then he obviously, you think he doesn't know, because otherwise you wouldn't be asking him again and again.
Yeah, because he knows. Thank you so much, Gautam. Okay. Lots of love and blessings. Okay. Thank you.
Take care. All right. I think we can end on that note and sit in silence for a couple of minutes. I will just change the view so I can see all of you all. It's really funny, and I'm going to take this up in the next Sunday talk, you know. I mean, as Joel Goldsmith says, it's so absurd that we pray to God for things, because then we obviously assume that he doesn't know what we want. We know what we want. And then when we make such a royal mess of it, you see, that's what happens. I mean, I want to pray to God for something which I don't have, which I feel will be good for me. God may not know it. I know it. And then I ask God for it again and again and again, because he's not listening to me. The true prayer is to offer one's being to situations that arise, to people one encounters in life, to be there totally and completely for them. That is the true prayer. Not wanting to change people, not wanting things to be a certain way, the way I feel they should be. That is called unconditional prayer. A prayer without conditions. And a true prayer is a prayer of gratitude to God, not only for the good things in life, but also for the suffering. Because through the suffering, I have seen things which I would not have. I have learned things I would not have. I have become more sensitive because of my sufferings. I have become more sensitive to the suffering of others. Gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. Life is short. This is a journey of learning. We are learning every moment.